Welcome to the Sourcing Industry Landscape Podcast, powered by SIG.org and hosted by Dawn Tura.
Well, folks, welcome back to the podcast series. I'm excited today because we're going to be talking to some Future of Sourcing Award winners in the innovations and outsourcing category. And boy, we have some heavy hitters with us today. So what I'd like to do is first off, welcome Jamie. And Jamie Ogleville-Smalls is from GEP, where he's a vice president and part of the global leadership team. He's responsible for all GEP services delivery in Europe and has over 20 years experience in procurement consulting, managed services, and technology. Now, his primary focus is strategic client engagements for organizations based in Europe, and he acts as the key client liaison, taking full responsibility for managing all aspects of GEP's delivery for his clients. He also has been a frequent speaker, and he has a particular focus in pharmaceuticals and financial services, alongside work in oil and gas, manufacturing, FMCG, and public services. His category expertise covers a wide range of both direct and indirect spend areas, and he joined GEP back in 2013 and has a master's degree in chemical engineering from the Imperial College, University of London. And not to be outdone, but then we have Dr. Frank Kabor. And Frank is a visionary and authentic senior leader renowned for outstanding people management skills with a dynamic landscape of international business. He's dedicated to fostering a strong team culture rooted in values of honesty, reliability, and authenticity. In his distinguished career at Bayer in AG Germany, Frank has served as the vice president of rapid deployment team governance and enabling within procurement since 2016. He leads a global team of approximately 50 high potential consultants across Germany, the United States, India, China, and Mexico. And he's also demonstrated strategic strength in managing global partnerships with GEP. So on top of that, we have this amazing conversation we're going to have, and I want to delve into the award itself. But before we get started, folks, we're going to take a quick break from a word from our sponsor. And when we return, you're going to hear more from Jamie and Frank. So welcome, Jamie and Frank. We'll be right back.
Sourcing Industry Group, or SIG, is the premier global sourcing association and is widely known as a forum for providing thought leadership, networking, and training opportunities. Another central element of SIG is training. SIG is the parent organization for SIG University, which was founded on the ideals of elevating sourcing and risk professionals to deliver strategic value to their organizations and transform their careers. It was created at the request of SIG members who saw an educational training gap for today's workforce and offers one-of-a-kind certification and training programs for professionals seeking deep expertise in sourcing, governance, risk, intelligent automation, and more for themselves and for their teams. We perfected e-learning for adults before it was necessary. Our proven model for adult learners provides a flexible environment with online lessons, quizzes, and discussion forums moderated by expert faculty. Programs are offered in several different delivery models depending on you or your organization's need. Open cohort semesters start on average every 1.5 months, while closed cohorts for teams of 20 or more can start at any time. In addition, we also have self-paced or fast-track options. You can learn more about all of these offerings on the SIG website or by reaching out to one of our representatives. So make sure to take advantage of all that SIG has to offer for both members and non-members alike, because there really is something for everyone.
Well, welcome back, folks. And I am really excited to have you two here today. So I have to tell you, innovations and outsourcing was a huge category. We probably had close to 20 nominations. And we, as you both know, we have an esteemed panel of judges, and unanimously, yours rose to the top. So can you please maybe share with our audience, what was the background that inspired or necessitated you to come to this partnership arrangement?
Jamie, why don't you go first?
Thanks, Frank. I will. Thanks, Dawn. So great to get the chance to speak with you and the group today. I think this was a really interesting opportunity. I know that Bayer had gone through a number of business changes, and we're looking at procurement and really how to get to the next level. Very capable procurement function, lots of strengths there, but really as the organization was changing, looking at how do we look at changing the operating model very fundamentally, and Bayer went through a very thorough RFP process, as you would expect, of course, from a procurement function, select a GP. And, mm-hmm. I think fundamentally it was such a big change. It was both an outsourcing, but also a fundamental change of operating model that we needed to work, together right from the start to make sure this works effectively. It's not just a transactional relationship. There's a lot of, complexities, et cetera, that needed to be managed. So that was really the background and the outset to how we got started together.
Yeah. And thank you, Jamie, for paving the way here. And thank you, folks, for having me. And nice to talk to you also, Don.
Yes. So
our organization needed to go through cost cutting. And so we needed to be more efficient. And we were organized in a very scattered landscape around the globe. And we needed globalization and to kind of bring that back home. And here we selected GEP as our partner to support us in that journey. And the beauty of GEP was the twofold. GEP had the consultancy to really help us in driving that change, but then taking it over into what we call the business as usual model and really helping us to perform in the operations. And the vision we created from the get-go was to do that not just as a fee-for-service model, but really do that as a partnership, as partners on eyes level. And that was kind of the beauty of that whole mission we started a couple of years ago.
So you talked about, Jamie, you talked about an old model and new model. So could you guys maybe elaborate on what model did you move from and to?
I'll go first. So the old model was that Bayer was organized, had his procurement organization divisionally organized and completely decentralized. So we had procurement organization in each and every country where Bayer is operating. We had very different processes, very different systems on which we operated. And that in itself is not a modern model. It is very cost intense, very labor intense. You don't create synergies through procurement, and we needed to change that. And the new model now is a globalized, highly decentralized or global led centralized model where we operate in just a few hubs around the globe. Mm-hmm. And some countries where we have big presence or big sites, there we also have some presence. And that in itself now created that potential to create synergies and be more efficient and then gain value and do some optimization.
Yeah, and if I can add to Frank, Dawn, then that in that new model then, the role of GEP is to play a key role in the kind of middle part of procurement, if you will, doing a lot of the sourcing, for example. It varies depending on the category. There's also a third group in that, which is the Bayer Shared Services Organization, which then runs procurement operations globally. So all of that fits under that new structure with a more, central governance, et cetera. So it was a significant change, both in terms of who does what, but also where it's done. And how centralized.
Okay, so you talk about you went from a completely decentralized to a center-led strategic organization, and GEP is doing some of the procurement on your behalf as an outsourced partner. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. So as Jamie said, we have these three pillars. So that's the Bayer captive organization doing the majority of the strategic parts. We have then GEP doing some of the strategic, a lot of operational parts. And then we have our own shared service center organization doing a lot of the operational tactical work. And while we have those three parties, you really need to have also a strong governance to really kind of make that three parties somehow work as a clockwork. And this governance is orchestrated by, and we call them the external partnering team, whereby we have two folks on both sides who really run the day-to-day operations in that partnership.
Yeah. And if I can add maybe, Dawn, to Frank's point, and I know it's something he and I are both passionate about, that some of this is about the model and the structures and the governance, but from the very beginning, one of the biggest things that has made this work is a shared ethos, a shared, partnership mindset, which Frank mentioned before. And that's not just a concept. We actually spent time at the very beginning of the relationship to sit down together in person, which we did actually just before the COVID pandemic hit, and say, how are we going to make this jointly successful? And what will this look like together? And who's going to do which parts of it to make it successful? And I think that kind of partnership, lighthouse partnership vision, as we called it then, still lives today. And that is very much what we're, jointly trying to steer the partnership towards. So there's many parts to make this successful. There's the right processes, there's the clarity of who does what, there's the governance, but there's also that ethos, which plays an absolutely crucial part as well.
Absolutely crucial. But, Jamie, you brought up a really good point. You said that you got together in person pre-COVID. Does that mean that you guys rolled this program out during COVID?
Yes. Yeah, it absolutely does.
Wow.
It was a challenge.
It was a big challenge. I had the challenge at the time to lead that transformation from the GEP side. We started, in fact, we were lucky enough that we had started properly pre-COVID, in that we had got some of the alignment ready. We had started some pilots, but we had transitioned less than about 2% of the total work. And then we had travel all around the world happening. And then suddenly, obviously, it hit. And we obviously had the debates at that time. Is this going to go away in a few weeks? And quite quickly realized it wasn't. Then had the challenge to carry on during COVID, which wasn't easy by any means. In fact, we got the whole transition done, on time per the original timescale. And I think it was a good example, actually, of the governance that this was a very complicated set of changes on every side. But we saw this risk coming, obviously, at the time everyone did. And mm-hmm. we very quickly said, okay, what are we going to do about that? Do we slow things down? Do we stop? Or do we actually just say, okay, we've got some of those people enabled. We'll start using, virtual much more. We'll have to take a different approach. We a lot more documented rather than just town halls and those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But we very quickly kind of steered into that. I wouldn't say it was fault-free and that didn't cause any problems. It did. It made a different approach. And I would say the obvious factor that anyone would know now is that the kind of team building side of it was more challenging, of course, during that time. But, we've therefore tried to, make up for that more, since as well.
Hmm. Okay, so you're back to seeing each other in person and more travel and physically trying to bring the teams together as well.
Yeah, and this helped a great deal over the last 1 year since we were able to get back together and see each other. We were able to build trust even in the virtual setting. So it works, but it took a little longer and there were more hiccups. But we were trying with two very simple formulas to kind of guide our joint teams. And that was the formula. It basically says 1 + 1 = 3. So you uh-huh. have to add value as a partnership. And 1 + 1 = 1, which means you have to speak with one voice in such a partnership. And these simple formulas helped the organizations to understand the concept of our vision as a lighthouse partnership.
I like that. So talk about the results then. How successful was the program and where were the results?
Maybe let me start, maybe Frank, if that's okay, and you can sure add, hopefully not contradict too much. So, a lot of tangible results, Dawn. Obviously with these things, you have a lot of change that you go through and some intangible things. But from the start, we've set very clear targets across many metrics and have had a lot of success against hitting those. And So in terms of what those metrics are, I won't go through all of them, but a very comprehensive kind of balanced scorecard, if you will. So we're targeting, obviously, delivering cost savings. You know, you don't move away from that very often in procurement as a key concept. We're also targeting, you know, payment term improvements as well. Then we've got things like, you know, running sourcing processes quickly and effectively, you know, reducing supplier numbers. So some very tangible things which many procurement professionals will be very used to. But also we have a metric about customer satisfaction as well. So there's no point delivering, you know, some numbers if everyone's annoyed by it, right? So it's a very comprehensive joint scorecard that we've put in place. Some of those on the GP side are things that we're delivering, and it's against our metrics, and some of them are joint metrics as well. And we deliberately want both because that shows how GEP is adding value, but also make sure that we're working in the same direction. And that's the way we think it's been successful. So against all of those metrics, we've had targets each year. The targets get harder each year, as you would expect. But actually, you know, the delivery has been there. You know, we've been hitting those targets. So it's been a lot of success from our point of view in that sense. But Frank, please do feel free to add /contradict.
No, thank you, Jamie. It's the balance scorecard which we set up. There is also efficiency targets in that. And we, through the governance, where we sit together on a regular basis, we review that. We review the progress against those KPIs. And as Jamie said, yeah, the KPIs are getting harder and harder, but also our partner is getting more and more familiar, which kind [S2] Yes. [S1] Of makes it possible to kind of stretch a little bit instead of rest somewhere. So, but we do that in a joint partnership mindset. And especially also the joint targets, which we think are important, especially if you are so interlinked with your service provider, as we are with GEP, it makes more sense to drive behavior of the joint teams into the right direction instead of fighting for this, oh, this was my contribution or this was my contribution, yeah? And so the behavior is also what we are kind of proud of, that we found that formula for the joint targets. So to really push both organizations and stretch both organizations.
So you had strong commitment, it sounds like, from both organizations, and obviously between the two of you, strong leadership. But what is truly the secret behind the success? Is it the people first side of it? What would you say has really drove the success?
I would say one element is the vision of our senior leaders, so the senior executives, who really started, we want to make that a lighthouse partnership. Mm-hmm. That was factor number one. And that was a commitment by both the founders of GEP, but also the CPO of Bayer, Thomas Udesen. On the other hand, it's then us trusting each other and building that trustful relationship to really stand up to the formula of 1+1=1. And here I think it's the people side, and I'm pretty sure that if Jamie and I or Katarina and Joel wouldn't trust each other as we do, we wouldn't be where we are at that point in time. And therefore I think the secret is the trustful relationship between human beings, to really push for that and also sail the ship through stormy weather, which we clearly had as well.
Well, I was going to say that because, I mean, trust is always seems like it's always being tested by people, and things are thrown at you, especially since you had to do all this during COVID and everything else. So that trust is really important, that it has been able to stand up to the tests that have been thrown to it, and you still continue to trust each other. But then, Frank, if you could, like, and Jamie, what are you going to do to make sure that these results are sustainable, that the changes you made are going to stay in place and grow year after year? So can you speak to a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I start, and Frank, okay, of course, to add. I mean, I think probably if we build from the previous point that, you know, you can set things up well and the trust is key. Obviously, it all comes down also to, you know, are we delivering? You know, are people actually delivering against those metrics, right? So I think that's the first part, which, you know, engenders trust. And if you're not, then obviously it goes the other way. But how do we maintain the you know, and sustain this? You know, we need to keep delivering. You know, those targets, as Frank's saying, are getting harder each year. There's changes happening. You know, firstly, we've got to, you know, do the basic work well. But then I think this point on the governance, I would say, and the relationship, we don't see those as static. Okay, so you've got a structure and you've got teams who look at that. But from a vision perspective, we regularly actually reconnect. In fact, Frank and I were together in Germany with the teams a month or so ago, and talking about, okay, where are we now? Where do we want to be next year? How do we get there? And how do we jointly work towards that? You know, not everything is laid out at the beginning. You know, the relationship, you have to see how it develops. You have to see things change. You know, uh-huh. I think on the buyer side, you know, the organization's changed. It's still changing. We will make more changes. So it's about having an overall frame, but then, you know, regularly putting the time into thinking, okay, strategically, where do we want to get to? And then obviously operationally on the ground, you know, delivering against that. So that's how I would see it. Frank, please do, of course, add.
I can confirm what Jamie said. So we had the contract. The contract is the basis, and then you have to put the frame around that, and you have to fill the frame with life. And mm-hmm. we're giving the frame, but we are also allowing a freedom within the frame to operate and adjust, because we have a very diverse group. We have 3 direct areas, 4 indirect areas. So that and 3 divisions, which we need to serve, which is in itself a diverse group to serve. And so therefore, we need to allow a certain freedom to operate within that framework. But the governance provides the frame, and we adjust the path going forward while we march through the years. And the mm-hmm. plan which we lay out is important, but it's just the guidance. And then right. we react in between and be flexible.
I like that. So if you had some parting words for other leaders that are listening in today on this podcast, what would be your parting, you know, ideas there? What would you want to leave with everybody?
I think mine would probably be that I think these, you know, this is a major, you know, managed services outsourcing engagement. These can work and they can work really effectively, but they don't just work by magic and they don't just work by writing a contract and hoping it works. It works by making sure joint vision's there at the start and that's refreshed and that senior leaders are bought in on both sides. That's really essential. It works by everyone delivering, you know, what they've committed to. And lastly, it works by having the right people with the right trusting relationship, you know, steering that as well. And with that all together, it can deliver tremendous value. So that would be my parting thinking.
Good, Frank.
And I subscribe to everything what Jamie said, especially the people side and the vision side. But I would also say, as an humble advice to everyone who would like to embark on such an endeavor, is try to be simple. Do not try, while you write the contract, while you write the engagement models, don't overcomplicate things. The beauty is in the simplicity of the models, and go for simple solutions, which helps you executing later on the contract while you go down the road.
You know, it's not a wonder that GEP and Bayer are sitting here talking about this. I mean, both of your organizations have such incredible reputations. And the procurement organization within Bayer is known worldwide for all of the efforts that you're putting forward. And GEP, of course, is known worldwide. So I am just very excited and proud to be able to say that I sat down with you today And could I offer up, if folks want to carry on the conversation with you further, can they reach out to you and ask you more about this partnership and how it all rolled out?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, of course. You're very welcome.
Well, good. Thank you so much. I know we're out of time right now, and I'm going to wrap this up. But thank you for taking time, and thank you for sharing your story, the backstory behind why you won the Innovations in Outsourcing. And I will tell you, Jamie, every year GEP is almost always winning one of the top awards. So you must be very proud of your organization. I love working with you guys. It's been great. And I tell you, Frank, Bear has such a great global reputation as well. So really excited to have you both here on the podcast today.
Thank you, Dawn.
Thank you, Dawn.
Folks, that's going to conclude today's podcast. But make sure you listen in very, very soon. So thank you. Have a wonderful day, wherever you are, day, morning, afternoon, or evening. And stay safe and stay healthy. And as we're recording this, just before the holiday season has fully kicked off, please have a wonderful holiday wherever you may be.
Thank you for listening. Subscribe to the Sourcing Industry Landscape podcast through iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Want to nominate yourself or someone else for an interview? Email us at podcast@sig.org.